listening to Foods for Thought, nutrition's link to mood, memory, learning, and behavior. The book is written by Burnell Baldwin, Ph.D., Vicki Griffin, Ph.D., and Evelyn Kissinger, R.D., and is published by Lifestyle Matters, Incorporated, copyright 2003. The book is read by its author, Vicki Griffin. I'm your host, Dane Griffin, and I'll be reading the introduction to each section and the specially selected insert sections. While the entire text of the book is contained on this CD set, just a selected portion of the special insert sections are read here, and none of the wonderful recipes are read. For information on how you can attain the printed version of this book, visit us at www.lifestylematters.com. That's lifestylematters.com, or call us toll-free at 1-866-62-4-LIFE. That's 1-866-624-5433. Foreword, written by Helen Kim, Ph.D., Director, Department of Pharmacology and Toxicology, University of Alabama at Birmingham.
With ever-increasing amounts of information, and with technology ever-increasing, isn't it ironic and yet somewhat comforting to know that Mom was right? Eat your fruits and vegetables. They're good for you. Now, what do I mean by this statement? It's everywhere. You don't have to read scientific journals to be aware that scientists have been rediscovering the goodness of certain foods, namely that fruits and vegetables are not just good for you, they're better than good for you. Recent research shows that, in addition to nutrients, there's another class of chemicals called phytochemicals that are in fruits and vegetables, providing another significant reason to eat them. Phytochemicals is a bit of a misnomer, since all the other things that have been identified as being good for you are also plant or phytochemicals. So how can something be better than good? Most of the newly discovered phytochemicals have no caloric value, nor are they a source of the chemical building blocks that our bodies need, i.e., they do not provide protein, fat, or carbohydrate. Thus, they are not nutritious in the standard sense. However, many of these phytochemicals may have important roles in our bodies by protecting us against conditions that, if unchecked, could lead to illness or disease, particularly chronic diseases, once we grow old. Thus, we don't see short-term effects of eating foods that are enriched in these phytochemicals, but we may suffer the long-term consequences of not eating them when, unfortunately, it may be too late to do anything about it. This is the worst kind of rationale to use when we try to convince people about the validity of something. We can't point to an effect and say, "See, that happens in a week if you don't eat apples or grapes," because everyone wants to see immediate effects to be convinced of a benefit. But, of course, the best-case scenario regarding some chronic diseases, such as Alzheimer's, for example, is nothing, namely, that you don't get it. But even with taking protective actions, it is probability we are talking about. We all know people who have lived all their lives on lousy diets and who seem to be perfectly healthy. Conversely, we know people who have lived right. They've eaten the right things, and furthermore, they've exercised. So how come they got cancer or had a heart attack? And the answer is that we don't fully understand how chronic diseases such as cancer or heart disease develop. We know that there are certain risk factors for both, but they are just that, factors or conditions that increase the probability of your getting the disease. Just because you smoke, that is no guarantee, fortunately, that you will have a heart attack in your lifetime. However, following the laws of health dramatically reduces the risk of lifestyle-associated diseases and greatly improves the quality of life, both mental and physical. What does any of this have to do with our minds or brain health? This, after all, is a book about nutrition and the brain. Well, strange as the idea may be to some people, the brain is an organ in our bodies, like the kidney or the heart. It requires nutrition and other chemicals, and, therefore, it is directly affected by what we eat and by what we don't eat. But the brain is unique from the other organs in that it is the seat, if you will, of what makes us human and what distinguishes each of us from one another. It is the seat of intangible things like our personalities and our emotions, unlike our livers or bones. Finally, as with many other organs, we have one brain for our whole life. Increasing evidence indicates that if we subject our brains to abuse early in life or do not protect them sufficiently, we put ourselves at risk for illness later in life. This abuse can be in the form of psychological trauma, such as suppressing horrific memories of childhood experiences, or it can be in the form of nutritional trauma, like caloric deprivation or phytochemical insufficiency. The latter is of increasing concern to researchers like myself. But the good news? Experiments show that certain phytochemicals, namely the polyphenols, complex compounds found in many fruits and vegetables, can actually protect animals such as mice and rats against late-life cognitive impairment and even cognitive dysfunction brought on by taking out ovaries from animals, which mimics menopause, since estrogen levels become greatly reduced. Some of us see real beneficial actions in our brains due to plant polyphenols because of what is understood about them chemically as antioxidants. Now there's an overused expression. Some of us scientists don't fully understand what that terminology really means, but we do know that in general, having high levels of oxidizing molecules floating around our organs and blood, for that matter, predisposes us to disease. So having compounds that counter the oxidizing activity of any compounds should be good. And indeed, much evidence is accumulating that says that is the case. As I mentioned earlier, doing things for our brains and cognitive health, even if we never see the consequences, is in a different category from doing things for all the rest of our body. After all, we can treat almost all other conditions physically. That is, osteoporosis can be dealt with, as well as cardiovascular disease, cancers at certain stages, failing eyesight, hearing loss, etc. But once your mind goes, or you truly become demented, so that you are not you, those are areas that are much harder to treat. There are drugs that will treat mental conditions such as depression, but in some cases the patients are better than new. That is to say, they are literally different people than when they were depressed. That is good in that there's no longer depression, but it can be devastating for friends and family to have to deal with mom, but not mom. So I say, as a global community of concerned friends, parents, and colleagues, we need to be supportive in our own ways of all the research we can be aware of. We need to find out what these phytochemicals, the polyphenols, do in our brains. Are they really protective against later cognitive dysfunction? How do they work? Most important, what can we learn from these types of experiments that will help us to protect ourselves and our children in other ways, such as against ill health, particularly late in life, when we want to relax and enjoy life, not to be sickly or burdens to our children or spouses. The most important legacy we can leave our children may be what they don't get. The information in this book is important for us to understand conceptually as well as to incorporate into our lives. As we learn, the more the expression "to eat well is to live well" becomes more meaningful.